Good morning. Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session from May City Council for Thursday, March 31st, 2011. The first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting. You can pull out your is it agendas or agendum or agendi? Neither. I don't have a pen. Oh, thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Okay, items 3A through 3C.
Mayor and council members?
Yes.
Already?
Wait a minute, he's not even on council.
Item 3A, Carniceria La Constancia. There's still some issues on that. We've heard from the applicant that they're more than likely going to withdraw their application, but they've not done so at this point in time, so we'll give you an update on Monday on that.
All right, so that, okay, that as of now, the recommendation for denial still stands.
Yes, sir.
And you'll update us Monday. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, 4A through 4E. F through 5A. B through 6A. Okay, that was easy. Yes, Mr. Brady.
Item 5C will be withdrawn from the agenda. The grant with the IGA with the Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
So that'll be taken off your agenda for
Monday. 5C will be removed. All right, thank you. All right, the next item is to hear a presentation to discuss the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport economic benefits. Mr. Cousy, I'm assuming you're in charge of this.
Members of
Mr.
Council.
Cousy, thank you. Liz Lynn Cousy, what is your official title?
Executive Director.
Executive Director, the big kahuna of the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. Of which I am honored to serve on the board for the authority. So, take it away.
Thank you. We had done an economic impact analysis of the airport a number of years ago using ASU's School of Business, and we had the feeling last year that significant growth had occurred at the airport. So we wanted to try to measure that growth, and we engaged ASU again. Dr. Lee McFeeters is here with me this morning from the ASU School of Business. And he has done several of these economic impact analyses for airports and specifically for our airport and for the state airport system. So I'll let him tell you about his findings in the economic impact analysis that he did that he finished based on data from last summer. Dr. McFeeters.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to just hit the highlights of this study, but to give you sort of a starting point, the approach that you take in an economic impact study of an airport is to treat the airport as a site of commercial and industrial activity. You know, we usually think of an airport as you fly in, you fly out, you park there, but you don't spend much time there. But there's a lot of economic activity that is based particularly at Phoenix Mesa Gateway. But at large urban airports, you can have several thousand people employed. And I am going to give you some numbers today for Phoenix Mesa Gateway. And I think what's really impressive about them is that we have a growth situation there, an environment which is very, very positive. And the context, of course, is that within Arizona, we've had about three consecutive years of job loss at Gateway. We've actually added jobs. Let me just see if, does this, okay, this is great. There's a methodology from the FAA as to how airports are analyzed and how you would do an economic impact study, and that is very handy because, first of all, you would compare an airport to itself over time, and that's what we've done with this study. You would also be able to compare airports either across the state or even in other states, because these studies are done under certain guidelines that mean that the terminology and the results and the approach are going to be comparable and very, very similar. So the bottom line then, just to say what the economic impact of the airport is, it would be $685 million, and that would be a number then that you could compare to Burbank or Las Vegas or any other airport you looked at. That includes the so-called multiplier effects that take account of the fact that spending recycles within the local economy. Overall, there would be over 4,000 jobs supported. Now, coming right down to the airport, there are 44 employers on the airport. And most of those, of course, have something to do with passenger traffic, general aviation activity, but there are also some research firms. There's medical transport, a wide variety of employers, and over 1,000 jobs directly on the airport. About 82% of them are private sector jobs. The income earned over $68 million. That's taken home by the workers. Then that recirculates within the local community. We asked everybody on the airport, either what is your revenue, what are your sales, for public agencies, what is your budget? You add that all together, and that's your on-airport revenues. For 2010, that was over $300 million. One other item that we looked at very, very closely was the amount of capital improvement taking place on the airport. Where is it coming from? What is the mix of public versus private? And I would just call your attention to the fact that over the last 3 years, there's been over $100 million invested into the airport, and about 60% of that has been from the private sector. So again, you have job creation, you're attracting private capital. The table that you have in front of you is really one of the most interesting findings that we had. We did, as Lynn said, a similar study, same methodology, in 2008, and comparing then 2008 with 2010, we see that airport employment was up 45%. I just point out that, again, this was a time when Arizona was losing jobs. Every community, every metropolitan area was losing jobs. The airport was, at that point, adding jobs, and the sales revenues and so forth on the airport were increasing. The big source of activity, of course, is airline visitors coming in. Allegiant Airline is a major employer on the airport. Over 300,000 employments, and two-thirds of people either getting on or getting off of airplanes are visitors. That's a very high proportion of visitors, and it shows that the airport and the area have been very successful in attracting visitors. Over $60 million of visitor spending takes place in the airport service area through these visitors, and that creates almost 1,000 jobs in the hospitality sector, hotels, motels, restaurants, and so forth. The way we looked at it, the economic value of any arriving airliner, over $25,000, simply because over 60% of the people on that aircraft are visitors, and they're going to be spending in the local community. Wanted to also remind all of us that there's a tremendous presence of general aviation aircraft at the airport, particularly in the area of maintenance, repair, upkeep, and so forth, with Cessna and other similar employers. And, of course, people do come to the area not by airlines but by general aviation, and they spend money as well. So we added all that together, and that pushes the total spending by visitors to $68.9 million, you can see that that is up over 85%, again due to the presence of Allegiant Air. So that has Allegiant has really been a major source of economic impact for the for the area and for the airport. These last couple of slides are simply the bottom line numbers. The economic benefits then we would say are $685 million. That's the economic benefits. Over 4,000 jobs created, 1,000 of those are on the airport, another 1,000 are off the airport, and then another 2,000 or so are created by the secondary spending, and that's how you get to over 4,000 jobs created by the presence of the airport. Another way of looking at all this activity, instead of just saying, you know, what happens in a year, is just to take a day as your snapshot of activity. And in any given day, there's over 4,000 people in the area that have arrived at Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, and they're going to spend $189,000 on the average, and that's what keeps those jobs supported year-round. We did a very simple straight-line projection basing our spending and economic activity on a per passenger type of ratio. If employments went up to 850,000, and the potential is certainly there, your economic impact the airport would exceed 1.5 billion, and then it goes up from there in a straight line kind of fashion as you approach and exceed 2 million passengers, of course, then you have almost a $4 billion economic impact. And again, over the long term, that potential is well there. Just kind of wrapping up, I wanted to express my appreciation to the Mesa Convention and Visitors Bureau. They are the folks that really kind of keep watch on that visitor spending and that activity, and they were very willing to share their numbers with us, and so we adapted them to this particular study, and that, you know, it really is the heart of the off-airport presence, all those visitors coming in. They are the ones that that generate all the jobs off the airport. So 1,000 jobs on the airport, another 1,000 jobs off the airport, and then your secondary spending effects, and that's where you get to 4,000 jobs. So that's the kind of the high-speed review of these numbers. And if we have time for questions,
yeah. Any questions? It's just incredible to see the growth going on out there and to experience it. It's a great story to tell because it's something that is unique. I don't know that there's any other example in the country where you have this type of a transition from an Air Force facility to an extremely successful commercial airport, reliever commercial airport. I think that the future is really bright for Gateway. There's certainly some challenges ahead. Hopefully fuel costs don't hurt the airlines, especially Allegiant, too badly. But the thing that's interesting is that most of those visitors, or a good chunk of them, are visitors that I believe, because of Allegiant's business model and the communities they service, a very high percentage of those are new, or what I would call incremental visitors. They're visitors that may or may not come here. And I know from, this is all from story, what do you call that when it's not anecdotal? Thank you very much. But I know a lot of people who come here simply because Allegiant is there, and because of where they live and the service area that Allegiant has. So a lot of these visitors, this is really new money into our economy, which is the best kind of money. I mean, these are not people that normally would have gone through Sky Harbor. This is new business. So it has an extraordinary impact on our economy. So that's great to know. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I appreciate the report. You know, the success story of the airport and the former Air Force Base is really a pretty remarkable one if you consider similar bases nationwide. And it's such a remarkable story that the National League of Cities has chosen this as one of the mobile workshops for its national convention, which is coming to Arizona this fall, to look at the impact of the new jobs, of the airport growth, of its interaction with the university and the other businesses. So, again, your study really is a reinforcement in terms of what we think the importance of the airport is, and it's certainly it's nice to be recognized by the National League of Cities as one of the leading examples of base reuse in this country. Thank you.
Thanks. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd also like to extend my appreciation for taking the time way too early in the morning to come to a study session to present this. This happens to be the second time I've had the privilege of listening to this. The first time was at the board meeting. I was sitting in for the mayor. So it seems like some time ago now, but it was only several months ago, and I thought it was very important that the council have an opportunity to hear this report, but also an opportunity to put it up on Channel 11 so that the citizens of Mesa get to hear it, because this report really quantifies what we've intuitively believed, and that is that we can turn what is a BRAC Air Force base into a real economic engine for this community. And for almost 4,200 total jobs supported directly or indirectly, $188 million in payroll, $685 million in total revenue, is a really fine start to our plans for that area. And I think it goes to prove that we really need to continue to support and further develop the strategic plan for that region in order to bring in those 100,000 high-wage jobs. And this, in addition to new additions like the engineering company that's Able Engineering Company that's coming, and First Solar that is moving not too far from the airport, show that this really helps to attract jobs and it's going to create a very special area for our city. Thank you.
Thank you. And one thing that doesn't come up in studies is, we'd like to believe that people make decisions based on spreadsheets, and that certainly is important to businesses when they're deciding where to go. You can't underestimate the perception factor because people go to places where they think they can be successful, and if they perceive that there is already success in that area, then it certainly makes it easier for those businesses to come into that area. And I know that the amount and the quality of inquiries we have coming into the Gateway area has certainly changed as the commercial side of things has improved, as the notoriety of Gateway has spread, and also as you have businesses that are successful. There's no doubt that a lot of the decisions made to go out there, Enable Engineering, for example, was greatly influenced by the fact that you have other successes and that you tell a good story, and that as they see that growth and they see those number of people, that's 300,000-400,000 in planements, but that's just one side of the equation. That means there's a million different trips or people, nearly a million, coming in and out of that airport because people come and they go. And that has an incredible halo effect, that success factor. So we hear it all the time, and we appreciate now seeing this in number that I don't think it's any accident that you've seen those great increases, and there really is a momentum out there that builds upon itself. So thank you. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, since we have Dr. McPeters here, can I take advantage of him and ask him to give us a little forecast on Arizona economy for the next couple of years? We're doing a budget discussion right after this.
You had to ruin the good feeling.
I've sat in many presentations, and I really appreciated his way of kind of understanding what's happening in our national and local economy. Do you mind kind of maybe sharing your perspective for the next couple, short-term forecasts?
I think the most, I don't know, I want to characterize this properly, but analysts that follow the Arizona economy, I think, were really disappointed about a month ago when the revised 2010 job growth numbers came out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. These numbers are based on surveys of employers, and the problem is that, of course, businesses, you don't have 100% response and so on, and so there are estimates then as to, what the actual numbers would be, and when those numbers are finally revised, we have a much better idea of what happened. at the end of 2010, there was a lot of optimism because it appeared that Arizona was in the top 10 states for job growth, growing somewhere close to perhaps 2%, which is not a, you know, a huge number, 40,000 jobs, but nonetheless looked very, very positive. The revised numbers have completely changed the impression for what happened in 2010. 2010 was our third consecutive year of job losses, and we're off to a very slow start here in February. The most recent numbers we have, for example, is that Arizona's just barely growing, and we have had 36 consecutive months of job losses compared to a year before. So what I'm saying is that this is an economy that is still, in terms of job creation, still at the bottom, still bumping along the bottom. So what that means is that probably we will see something in the range at most of statewide, perhaps 30,000 jobs, perhaps, in the whole state. And typically this is a state that can produce over 100,000 jobs in a year. So we'll be going at about one-third speed. Another disappointing statistic, home prices are still going down. That has an effect on consumers because the main components of wealth that they have are their 401k and the value of their home. Fortunately, stocks are back up, but not to where they were before. So you have then consumers that are simply not in the game in terms of the type of spending that we would usually expect to see in a recovery. For all of 2010, consumer spending nationally was up about 1.8%, and over the past 40 years, consumer spending has grown at double that, 3.6%. So what you've got is a consumer at half speed. You've got business reluctant to hire. You've got trouble getting credit. Arizona lost, we now determine, 12% of jobs. We thought it was only 11%. The rest of the country lost 6%. So we've been harder hit. We're still in a very weak position. And it makes this growth and it Gateway Airport all the more striking because everything else is basically at a very low level. The only thing you can really say positive is this, that you cannot really put off some purchases forever. That is, people seem to be buying durable goods and seem to be coming back. You know, there's pent-up demand, but family formation is running very, very slow, and that's usually one of the indicators that would be tied with, you know, buying new furniture, new homes, maybe even a new car. So we've just basically got an economy that is still struggling. So we expect to see positive growth in 2011, but it's just going to be very, 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 very slow, slow positive growth. And there's a debate right now among you know, my colleagues, Marshall Vest at the U of A, Elliot Pollack, forecasters at APS, and so on, as to whether there's going to be any single-family building at all beyond what we've already seen. That is, you know, no growth, another perhaps 10,000 units, same as last year, for the whole state. So you had to ask. No.
It's better to know when you're making decisions on the budget, but and I appreciate
it. Yeah,
but just we're committed, Mesa's committed to leading the way in job creation so we can help Arizona come out of, we'll create as many of those 30,000 jobs as we can. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate that.
Great. Thank you. Okay, the next item is the HERE presentation. Mayor, discuss.
Do you want to go back?
Oh, yeah, let's go back since we have some people waiting. There was one item on the agenda that we were going to hear a presentation on, and we skipped right over it. So my bad on that. Sorry about that. Item 5A on the regular agenda is a approve of funding for a study that's to be conducted with Valley Metro related to the light rail extension through Gilbert Road. So, Mr. James?
Yes, sir, Mayor. Good morning. I've got Wolf Grote with me here today. We've got a couple slides I'll go through quickly, and then if you have any questions, you can ask those. As many of you know, we've been working with Metro the last several months to keep going in our progress towards getting light rail to Gilbert Road. As a brief background, back in May of 2009, you approved a locally preferred alternative extending light rail that was funded to Mesa Drive by 2016, as well as identifying light rail extension to Gilbert Road that was currently unfunded. From that stage, the MAG approved that Gilbert Road extension as an illustrative project so we can study and move forward with that. And then working with Metro last week, the Metro Board did approve an agreement to work with us and conduct this study pending your approval, which we're seeking on April 4th. Many of you know the justification and the reasons why we're looking into this project. We've got really strong ridership demand, great bus connections, regional access from the freeways, really good revitalization opportunity with this corridor, as well as a really good location for intermodal facilities. One of the things that Metro did is they looked at a license plate survey where riders were coming to our Sycamore Park and Ride today. And you can see that nearly 29% of those people are coming from the west side of Mesa Drive. That means 71% of all the riders for the system today, not even the extension to Mesa Drive, are coming from well beyond Mesa Drive. As far as out as, you know, you can see strong ridership to Power Road.
West side or east side?
I'm sorry, east side.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. But you can see there's a strong ridership in the central core moving all the way out along Main Street. So just really good ridership. And this is consistent with the modeling that Metro has done with the alternatives analysis study as well. So Metro has prepared a scope of work to initiate the planning for this 1.9-mile extension. Metro will be the lead agency and manage the study in an amount not to exceed $500,000. Now, the funding for this is coming from some one-time credits that we've come into transit this current year that will offset our general fund contribution to transit service. So we've been fortunate in that area. But the project's really going to include a definition of what is it that we're looking to build, conceptual engineering, and a chance to identify those key factors that we'll have to deal with building this project. The project will also include community outreach because we definitely want to get the input like we did on our current project early to understand the concerns and needs of the community. So like I said, the key outcomes, we'll have a better understanding of the engineering issues in the corridor. This next one's key. We really want to get a good estimate for identifying future funding. We need a good cost understanding of what this is going to cost so that we can go out and look for money to build that project. We think there's opportunities to identify and reduce future construction risk, and ultimately allow Metro and Mesa to move forward with the federal environmental phase upon completion in about a year and a half.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you. Having enjoyed a 30-minute chewing out yesterday from a property owner along this corridor, I had a couple of questions for you. I think I know what the answers are, but what if you could just describe in this decision-making or these study processes, where have we been so far? This is one component. What would be the next step? I mean, if you can just clearly define where we're at and the costs we're spending on this. So am I helping you out?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, when we approved the alternatives analysis, that really just identified the technology and the alignment for what we wanted to do in the future. This planning study will allow us to identify the issues that we'll have to address in not only the construction but going through environmental. It'll give us a sense of what are going to be the impacts to properties, to historic historic properties, just typical right-of-way takes. Give us a sense of stations, where they can be located, how we're going to deal with traffic, and development in the corridor.
So the next step would be, so you identify or you have all this study completed, what would be the next step? You're saying go look for funding?
Yeah, the next step is we believe that there are regional funds that we could go to do the next phase, which would be the official environmental documentation, environmental study phase.
Okay. And we've, if I understand correctly, there's been some a lot of infrastructure work done at Gilbert and Maine and some of those areas that we've been watching. That's kind of a relocation possibly of utilities to make it more conducive for the light rail, and is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the purpose of those projects initially. It was really to update the existing utilities, but that will help reduce the risk and reduce the amount of utilities that we'll have to relocate at a later time when rail is
coming through. Let's make that clear. So the projects were not undertaken in any way, shape, or form connected. The projects that were undertaken were not undertaken because of light rail.
That's correct.
Now, I'm hoping that since they were already planned, with or without light rail, these would have been done.
That's correct, Mayor.
Someone would have said, hey, listen, we're going to do it this way. If light rail comes down, why don't we kill two birds with one stone? And we don't know if light rail is ever going to come through here. But since we're moving a pipe, we're not going to move it in a way that if light rail does come through here, we're going to have to turn around and move it back again, So the project had nothing to do with light rail, but as we planned, we took into consideration, much like they did down Main Street many years ago, when they moved all the pipes out of, when I say Main Street, in the downtown area, they moved all the utilities to the sides, and they had no idea light rail would come down there. But they said, if perhaps in the future it does, we'll move them out, and that's made it right. Much easier for us now. It's much less expensive.
Mayor, we do this with all our projects, okay. And it may be that we have a water sewer line project that's in need of replacement or rehab, but at the same time, we consider the future of what may be happening in that corridor. In this case, it may be light rail. In other cases, it may be new businesses that may be coming in. It may be some reconfiguration of the street. So just like anything, we try to look out into the future before, as you said, as part of our regular capital improvement program, we knew that we had to do improvements on Main Street. Main Street obviously is a main utility corridor for a variety of reasons. It's a main street. And we're actually just recently had a conversation about Main Street as it relates to stormwater. And some issues we needed to address with stormwater, and recognizing, hey, if we're going to have to address this, we're aware that there's the potential that some point down the road, light rail may be coming down Main Street, so we need to consider that as we have to address this issue regardless. We still have to address an issue regarding stormwater pipes and where they're located, and so we can put that into consideration. So we're trying to plan, we're anticipating those issues, but as you're right, we didn't go and tear up pipes just because we knew light rail was coming. They needed to be replaced. That was part of a regular capital improvement program. Anyway.
Okay. Follow-up, Mayor? So then on the planning side, I've had a wonderful presentation, and through the planning department, there's been some to look at that stretch and what the potential might be. Could we get an overview again, or could you just tell me what we were given as far as planning along those lines?
Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, we are in the early stages of the Central Maine plan and looking at that area. We do anticipate the potential for a stop if light rail comes on one side or the other, Gilbert and Maine, create an opportunity for redevelopment at that location, transit-oriented development, more intense mixed-use type development. We expect that at each of the stops along the way.
Yeah. So there's a tremendous amount of activity, as I've seen. There's a couple other pieces like neighborhood stabilization in some of those areas around just off of Maine. And so we're definitely on the path of looking at this and seeing the feasibility, finding the funding. Some of the components and what I was suffering from yesterday is easement, acquisitions, different things. I don't know if all of that's been, I know we're in some study phases, and it'd be nice, and I need to look forward to visiting with staff to find out how we're handling those and how business owners will be treated and what's expected for different things. So look forward to getting more information, but that kind of gives a little bit more perspective. There's a lot of wheels are turning along these lines, and no pun intended, but it's just you know, trying to make sure that we're all on the same path and what we're trying to achieve, because what I think the message is, like the mayor, we don't know if we'll ever get the funding from it, but look at this amazing effort going on in so many different areas. So it kind of sends a mixed message to businesses to go, why are you trying to take this if there's no, you know, take my easement if there's... So it's an understandable, maybe misunderstanding, and just some public outreach and better coordinating what we're doing. So that's kind of...
Yeah. Mayor, let me be clear. I don't think we've made any offers for any easement. We can't.
Yeah.
And we're actually not being...
Well, let me restate, if I could, in hopefully layman's terms. We think it's a really groovy idea to extend light rail. That's what we've said. We don't have any money to do it. We don't even know what obstacles we're facing as far as where the line goes, whether we would have to even take any property, any of those things. We have no idea. Right. The purpose for this study is to go in and say, okay, we got this great idea. We think it's a good idea. How could we implement this idea? And this study is basically going to go in and see and get the basics as to what challenges we would face if we were to implement an idea that just right now is a good idea. We think it's a good idea. Is that an accurate way?
That's accurate.
There have been no decisions. There's no detailed information. We're just going to the next step on what we think was a good idea. Now we're going to see if it's actually an idea that we could implement. Mm-hmm. If it is such a great idea, what obstacles do we face? What opportunities do we have? Is it worth going after some funding for that? Is funding available anywhere? And if it is, then we would go to the next step, which is implementation. But we're way far away from either one of those. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. So anyone getting excited about this, it is, as Councilman Finn says, a misunderstanding. And perhaps they read two articles at the same time and they saw their reality, which is the streets getting torn up. And maybe there was mention of light rail and they put the two together. And that's unfortunate. That's a misunderstanding as to what's going on, but I understand how those things can happen.
Well, and you know what? I'll just throw it out here. I've got a business owner that's been told they're going to hold his sign permits, won't allow him to do some improvements until he signs over easements and sign moving agreements for the future light rail. He's going, what the heck? So he hears what... Between Stapley and Gilbert in the new corridor. And what's been cited is the future alignment of the light rail.
Okay.
So, you know.
We'll have to follow up on that,
because
I don't know anyone can make that statement.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, well, the reason why it's the first time I heard that is that I don't know how someone could say that. So if they've said that, then we need to correct that.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor.
Because I think that's way premature. Okay, and I see Mr. Brady writing down a note, so I'm sure he will dutifully follow up on that. Okay?
Okay.
Any other questions? Mr. Grote, next time, please don't talk so much.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, getting back to the regular agenda, hear a presentation, discuss fiscal year 2010-11 update and the 2011-2012 forecast. Ms. Candace.
Yes.
The floor is yours.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. What we'd like to do today is give you an update. Since last we talked was back in February, but we gave you an initial forecast of where we were going with our revenues and our expenditures over the 2 years, 10-11 and 11-12. So this morning we'd like to talk to you about an update on where we are at this point, and then proceed with how we're going to go through the budget process over the next month. So things that have changed since the last time that I spoke with you, as we have had two different changes. One is, our 2010 census numbers have been received. So the last time that we spoke with you, we had done some estimates on what those impacts would be to the city. So we've recalculated those estimates, and I'll go over those. And we have some good news on that front for you. We've also had 3 additional months of revenue since the last time we spoke. And over that time, we've seen some trends that have been strengthening. So we've also recalculated some of those forecasts, and I have good news for you on that as well. So this is a good
now,
news.
Now, is that the revenue is because of the census? Did our proportion of revenue actually?
Next slide.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
I've got it for you.
Sorry. Usually I'm four slides ahead of you, and this one I'm behind.
So those are the two things that have changed since the last time I spoke with you, since we came forward. So on our census impact, we were basing it, before our estimate was based on the 2005 census, and our estimate was 448,000 people for 2010. When the 2010 census came out, we're now estimated at 439,000 people. So while our estimate in our total population has decreased, that is not what is affecting our state shared revenue. Our state shared revenue is based on our total percentage compared to other cities in the state. We had anticipated that our percentage of the total would decrease with the 2010 census. So we had already planned for that as part of the original forecast that we came with to you with.
So what really happened is that while we didn't grow as much as we thought, other cities also grew less.
Correct.
They didn't grow. They grew by a lesser percentage, therefore our proportionate share was higher than what we had estimated it would be.
Than what we had estimated. Okay. So our proportionate share did decrease. That is true.
Right. We expected that.
We expected that.
And that's not because we lost, make sure correct. What is our piece of the pie?
Correct.
And basically the pie wasn't as big as everyone thought it would be.
Right.
And other cities didn't, their pieces of the pie weren't as big as they thought it would be.
For us, and I just give credit to the budget staff, they got it right in Mesa. I mean, 600,000, they got it on the right side of the guess. And when you get $600,000 within a total of millions of dollars, their percentage of accuracy
is pretty
impressive to get this number right. And they always get it right because you want it on the positive side, not the negative side.
What did your March Madness bracket look like? How close were you on
BCU's
that one?
BCU's in the Final Four, so.
Okay.
I got a team in the Final Four.
18.
18. Okay.
18. So, yes, as Mr. Brady mentioned, our original estimate was about a $5 million impact from the 2010 census. And we're estimating now with the official numbers, it was about a $4.4 million impact. So that's a $600,000 in revenues that are now in our estimate that were not in our estimate a few months ago. So we're within $600,000 of the impact to 2010. So over the last few months, we have had some trends, as we've talked about, and as Mr. Brady has mentioned in previous meetings, over the last few months, we have seen our local sales tax increasing ever so slightly. And when I say increasing, I mean that it's not as negative as it used to be. So
not,
we
not
still
as bad.
It's not as bad. Excuse me, it's not as bad as it used to be.
We passed double negatives a long time ago. What are we on? A triple, quadruple negatives?
Quadruple negatives.
Somehow get us to the end?
Exactly. So okay. As you know, we always compare where we are today with where we were last year. So we are still below where we were last year on any year-to-date look. But it has improving, and has been improving over the last 3 months. So we are seeing a trend, a strengthening trend, in those particular revenue streams. So not only in, so right now we're about $5.7 million below the budgeted amount of what we budgeted for this year. And if you recall, we had originally budgeted an increase in our sales, local sales tax for this year. So we're still below our budgeted amount. But originally we had estimated we'd be about 6.4% below budget by the end of the year. And at this point, with a revised estimate, we're looking at about 5.7% below our budget amount. So we are seeing a strengthening in this revenue stream. So as long as this revenue stream, as well as then the state sales tax and also the vehicle license tax. So those revenue streams as well over these last 3 months have really started to show, again, not a substantial increase, but a slow strengthening over those 3 months. What this has allowed us to do, oh, I'm sorry, I have one more revenue to talk about, is our municipal court revenues, is our other revenue that we've looked at. The last time we came to you with our forecast, we did see a strengthening in our court revenues from last year's receipts. We weren't sure if that was a trend, or if that was just a kind of a one-time anomaly. We needed some more data. We needed some time to look back at it. Over the last 3 months, we have looked back, and it looked like it actually is a trend. What this trend is it actually it's not an increase in activity. It's a return to the previous level of activity. about 2 years ago, we had a decline in our receipts and court revenues. Again, not knowing whether that was a trend or a one-time, 1 or 2 year anomaly, we waited and we assumed that that would continue into next year. We're seeing that we're actually returning to the previous year's activities. So at this point, we feel confident in the strength of that particular revenue that we can go ahead and put that increased or return in revenue in next year's forecast. So that is a strengthening area of the budget as well. So when we pull all these together, all the various revenue streams, and we look at where we are for budget for this year, for where we estimate we think we'll be at the end of this year, we're looking to be about $5.3 million below budget by the end of this fiscal year. Okay. This is an improvement over the last time that we spoke regarding where we thought we'd be at the end of this year. So while it is a negative, it is an improvement in our condition. The increases from this year resets our base, and what that does is those revenues carry over into 11-12. So when we look at the 11-12 estimate, that we think that our revenues will decline again, $3.8 million in 11-12. But I do want to point out to you here, we are still projecting an increase in the city sales tax. The thing that really drives us down in 11-12 is our urban revenue sharing. And if you recall, the urban revenue sharing is the state shared revenue that has a 2 year delay in the receipts to the city. So we're still looking at the delay or the decrease that happened 2 years ago. Excuse me. 2 years ago, and we're experiencing that in 11-12. So while the other revenue streams will recover, the urban revenue sharing will have a delayed recovery coming back.
I'm a little confused at that, though, because the $6.5 million decrease, this is based on budget. So even though it's a two-year delay, that means we should know basically what we're getting. So is this a decrease year over year, or is this a decrease? Or is this a
decrease year over year.
This is not an...
This is a scheduled decrease.
Okay. So this is not a decrease as compared with previous budget.
Correct. This is correct. Not
just
for 11.
Comparing it from...
Last year to this year. This is not next year's original estimated budget.
No, it's not a budget. It's
okay, I want to make sure on that.
Yeah.
All right.
Correct.
Because we sort of switched then.
Right.
Budget to budget. Now it's
here's where we
10-11 to 11-12, and here's where we're going.
We're saying we're still slipping ground.
So that's 6.5. That 6.5 is a year over year, but that actually may have been right on budget since we have the 2 year lag. We know what it's going to be.
Well, we're setting the budget right now.
Yes.
So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
We just want to give you a comparative.
We just did a shift. I want
Correct.
To make sure that
Correct.
We're...
We're comparing budget for this year versus what we estimate at the end of the year. And now this slide is saying what we're comparing is what our projection for the end of this current fiscal year, how the revenues will look in the end of the next fiscal year.
And you can still see... Because the adjustment of this year's budget carries over and has impact on next year's budget.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I see. We shifted gears.
Yes. I'm sorry. So yes, the revenue strength.
We picked it up. We just don't know.
The revenue strength. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. Go finish your thought.
I said the revenue strengthening that we see in 10-11 carries over into 11-12.
Right.
So that strengthening is still there, but we had a scheduled decline in urban revenue sharing that really counters that strengthening, and still so we're still $3.8 million.
Right. So I mean, and then we'll get to Dennis. So if you look at the first line, the city sales tax. That new projection is driven by the reality of 2010-11.
Correct.
Right.
On the urban revenue sharing, we've known that number because of 2 year lag. That's not impacted. There's no impact year to year. So they're really different measurements on
Correct.
That. Okay.
Correct.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And my question to that point is that urban revenue sharing at risk in terms of what the legislature might do. I know the money was collected, 2 years ago, but is there still a risk that the legislature might modify that percentage of money to us? And I see Mr. Butler coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a risk.
How much is that risk?
Exactly.
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, as Candace just said, as long as the legislature's in session, we're always worried that there's a risk. But none of the proposals that have been presented, either the governor's proposal nor the Senate proposal, have included a decrease to shared revenue. They mainly because of the legal challenge that the Arizona Cities and Towns took a few years ago in the court siding with us, saying that it would require a supermajority vote of the legislature to do that. And fortunately, I think there's enough people down there that appreciate the job that you all do as members of council of balancing budgets and delivering services that you don't see that type of support in a broad scale at the legislature to try to take urban revenue sharing.
Well, then I suppose the remaining risk could be allegedly the Arizona House of Representatives is going to unveil, discuss, and pass a budget today that no one has seen yet. Is that right?
That's correct. The House Appropriations Committee is supposed to meet at 9 a.m. this morning to unveil what we believe to be the compromise budget that's been negotiated between the governor and the speaker and the president. And we've yet to see the budget, so we haven't been able to determine what impacts may be included for cities and towns.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
Thank
you. Okay. Are there any other questions on the summary of where we are?
No, just one other item, which may or may not, and it depends on the activity. I know I was in some stakeholders group the other day on impact fees, and one of the items that we had a real problem with was a proposal included in SB 1525 actually would affect our tax collections, because it actually allows for a credit, requires a credit against future revenues, operating revenues, general fund revenues for impact fees paid. Although, you know, in our contention is there's no connection between a capital fee and a operations fee, but that's what's in the current bill right now. So if someone comes in and pays an impact fee, you would have to do an estimate out the construction sales tax and also potential shared revenue generated by that unit.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And those then would be offered as a credit against impact fees that were paid. So it has a very dangerous shift from capital items or a capital collection into a operating account. And that's still in the bill, as we know. We're trying to get that out, but that's a big thing. The difference between capital and operating, unless that's been moved out recently.
Mayor, I think you're correct. The version of SB 1525 that passed the Senate did include that provision. There's been some discussion about softening that provision, but our concern is, first of all, that hasn't been completely removed. They're still looking at other general fund offsets that would go against capital projects, including construction sales tax and other things. It's what's frustrating, and I know Candace has a slide that's going to talk about impact fees, but one of our concern is that we're seeing the associations representing the home builders really trying to go after general fund revenue and receiving a credit for that. What we've said all along is that while impact fees go and build a fire station, we also have to pay for those men and women who staff that fire station, the apparatuses that are in there, the continuing maintenance on that equipment. You can't have it both ways.
Not only do we staff it, but one of the arguments we had was we build the fire station up front in anticipation of people moving in. Mm-hmm. We take the risk. The city takes the risk of building that and staffing it, because there's a plat in place, there's all this anticipated growth. Well, like what's happened in the last 5 years, and luckily we didn't get caught totally this, but a lot of cities did, where they built the fire station assuming there were going to be houses built. They staffed it with firefighters. Therefore, they incurred the capital expenditure of the fire station. Now they're incurring the obligation on the operations side, the general fund obligation. If that growth never happens, the city's stuck with the expenditures without the offsetting growth that would pay for that. To make matters worse now, what 1525 says is that the city will take the risk of building and staffing. Oh, and by the way, if people come and they pay sales tax on that house, and then they cause an increase in shared revenue, those go back against the impact fee that were paid to build the fire station. So now even the monies that were going to be there to fund the firefighters and the police officers is now going to go back to be refunded against the impact fees, not the actual, the estimated would go back and would refund that. So we would get hit on both the capital side and would be left hanging
so
on the
Mayor, I guess cities side. Won't be able to afford new development.
We seriously have
we
to look and see.
Decide whether that's
well, no, that's mean. What I said is we may actually, impact fees may not be the way for us to go.
No, well, there's we just yeah. I mean, you can't get utilities if we can't pay for them, and they can't get billed either.
And that's why, again, I said, listen, this is a significant change to a system that I believe needs to be adjusted. There have been excesses. There have been things that I don't agree with, which puts me at odds with some other cities. But I think Mesa has been a wise steward. I mean, home builders don't like the cultural portion of our thing, but that's $200 a house or so. But the fact is, on the most part, we are not the ones that would be hit the most by this, but it would still have a significant impact on us. And I think that this city has been an example as to how to implement impact fees in a fair and reasonable manner. But that's one of the challenges. And when you go and do a wholesale change to a system that's now been in existence almost 30 years, and 1525 does create wholesale changes to that system, which have huge unintended. I think some of them are actually intended consequences.
But you're right, Mayor. It's very troubling that the associations representing those groups are choosing to go after operating revenue that the cities then generate to help pay for the services that those new residents will have to encounter. Because if we can't use sales tax to pay to staff those facilities, then maybe not in Mesa, but what they're literally telling other communities, well, increase your primary property tax.
Yeah.
Well, guess what then? All current residents are continuing to subsidize that new growth if that's the option. And
well, if you're Mesa, you don't have that
you
option.
You don't even have that option. So
you don't have that option.
You have to decrease services then
right.
in other areas to subsidize the new growth. And so it's a very dangerous direction that the associations and the lobbyists representing that special interest.
I guess what concerned me is they seem to be oblivious to that impact, or else they didn't understand it. They either ignored it or they didn't understand it. Either one is bothersome. And you don't need to answer that question.
I think that's very generous. I think a lot of this is very well punitive. Known by the associations about
it seems like there's punitive measures.
Because once I think a lot of folks view it from the association side that once you turn the key over, then their transaction's done, and what happens after that?
Unfortunately, we have many come from that industry, out-of-state interests that literally take that approach. And that's unfortunate,
right?
Because you have some very good builders.
Absolutely,
you have some good, responsible developers and builders who do care. They're members of the community, and they'll be here for a long time. And you have others, and this is the nature of any business, that you have some that really care and create a legacy and care about the communities, and you have others that once they cash the check, their commitment is over.
That coupled with the fact, Mayor, I don't think a lot of the builders also appreciate sometimes what their associations are doing at the legislature. You really see sometimes a disconnect between the membership of the group and their hired lobbyists down at the legislature, and that's an important component to this as well that can't be overlooked. So.
Gives me an idea. I'll talk to you about afterwards. Okay.
All this has a direct effect on our future revenues, right?
Yes.
And how is that?
Yeah.
Want to make a point. Want to make everyone understand that this does have an effect. Okay, Kansas, go ahead.
And
I think Mr. Richmond was saying your time is over.
Good.
Pontificating.
I could only watch Debbie Smitter squirm so much as to if we were on the agenda still or not. So.
Yeah, we were.
I could watch that all day.
This will have a direct impact on as early as 11-12, I'll guarantee, if this thing passes.
It will, and there actually is a slide later that actually says impact fees. So if that helps out, you're just a few slides ahead.
Actually,
that's all.
Okay.
On that note, with the revenues, where does that put us? When we're looking at our 10-11 budget, and where does that put us when we're looking at our 11-12 budget? The shortfall over for our 10-11 revised revenues at this point is that $5.3 million. That carries over into 11-12, that 5.3 is an ongoing, with that additional 3.8 additional decline in 11-12. for a total two-year general fund revenue shortfall of 14.4. So that's how that goes together. The last time we spoke with you, we did talk about our expenditure pressures, so I won't spend a lot of time here. This really hasn't changed at this point. This is just to remind you of what's happening on the expenditure side as we go into the 11-12 fiscal year. We do have some pressures with our two main retirement systems, Arizona State Retirement System, as well as the Public Safety Retirement System. Our main pressure is in our employee benefit trust. That is our medical and dental costs.
And these are increases in these expenditures
from our 10-11 budget.
From a 10-11 budget.
So for our medical increases, we expect an increase of $2.4 million during the 10-11 fiscal year, during this current fiscal year, and an additional $8.9 million increase in our expenses for 11-12. So these are additional increases each year. Those would compound on each other. And then going into the future, we're estimating about a $2.4 million each year into the future for medical costs, just as medical costs increase. This is on our current base of employees. These are not new employees. These are our current existing employees.
And Mayor and Council, what you don't see here, though, is at the same time, the employees we last year, we also, start realizing significant increases also on their part of their health benefit costs. So this is the city share, but on the employee side, there's also significant increases.
So this is just the rise in health care costs.
Exact rising health care costs. That's right. And now we're going to do everything we can, and we're going to probably bring back to council some plan changes, amendments that we hope to try to mitigate against these increases. These are just our estimates based on current trends. But we are studying right now and hope to bring council some proposals about how we can try to mitigate some of these anticipated increases in the future. So it'll save both the city and the employees those additional dollars.
Councilman Fender.
So, you know, I see this 8.8 in 11-12. That's a four-time, you know, we have it averaged out 2.4 and then the subsequent years. Why, if there's a nutshell look at it, maybe we're going to have a presentation down the road on benefits, but
yes.
Why such a huge increase in 11-12?
Right. We presented, I think this is the same number we presented the council back in October. What it is, we are trying, as we discussed with council back then, we've established a policy, a goal, to get all the employees to a point where we're at a 80-20 split, where the city contributes 80% of the cost of the health benefits program, the employee contributes 20%. And we were going to do that over a three-year time period. And we were just trying to smooth that out. But for the employees so that there could be some stepped up cost each year, and they're fairly significant, but in order to do that, based on some projected increases in healthcare cost, changes to healthcare law and the benefits, that 8.9 million as we tried to smooth it out for the employees to get them to that 20% contribution, we still had to make up the balance, and that came to fell out to the city. I don't know, Candace, anything else that number?
Right,
why is number so high?
The $8.9 million was scheduled. This was not an anticipated cost. This was anticipated when we set the plans for the medical plans last fall as part of our 2011 plan alignment.
We're having to make up ground to get to what was happening in the prior years. We had been eating away at the we have a specific trust fund for the health benefits plan, and because of rising cost in the healthcare area, and yet for 3-4 years we didn't pass on any of those costs to the employees. Frankly, we're playing catch up a little bit on both sides, because that balance was dropping, and we were trying not to impact the employees during the times that we were reducing their pay and compensation, and not passing on the additional compensation. But essentially, we were hoping things would get better. They didn't, and so not necessarily from the economy, but hoping health care cost would begin leveling out, and they haven't. We've realized increases an average, 13% increases each year, and the employees haven't been paying the full amount, and we haven't budgeted out of the city contributing more. We've been eating down our fund balance to the point now where our consultants are concerned that we've gotten to a level that we can't go any further in order to cover costs during the year. And so that's why you see these contributions coming in.
Councilor Richens?
So on that last point, because, I mean, you look at this and you say, well, why wouldn't we just do $5 million 1 year and $5 million next year? Is the pressure on the fund balance that great that we have to eat it all in 1 year? Or can it be something that we can say, why don't we, you know, if we're stepping up the increase to employees, can we step up the increase over time to what we're contributing the fund balance for the benefit trust? Instead of doing it all this year, can we?
Right, no. And
next year, what's the pressure?
Right, the pressure is we waited, we kind of went a long time without either the city employees contributing more, as well as taking more contributions from the general fund. So we were allowing the trust fund balance to begin. Well, it was dramatically declining, and we were hoping to reach some level of stabilization, but the pressure of the 13% a year increases in healthcare costs really started putting a lot of pressure on us, and this was our only schedule in order to maintain that trust fund.
And we'll be coming back. We're continuing to look at that. And we're continuing.
We can look at maybe spreading it out over two fiscal years instead of just this.
Well, our benefits areas right now is looking at the cost containment.
Yeah, that's where we need to work first.
And that's really where we're going to start focusing. And we'll be coming back to you in April to talk about what they have discovered so far. And so far, they've actually been able to go in and find some cost reductions for us to take advantage of some different programs out there. And so we're going to kind of look at that and come back with you in April to kind of give you an overview of where we sit on the fund balance itself for the benefit trust fund.
Our pressure is because we separate the trust fund from the general fund, and we have to maintain a certain amount of fund balance in order to have sufficient there to cover all the claims that are being made during the year. And so we do have a minimum amount that we have to achieve, and the employees are seeing a significant increases during the same years. If we look that costs are not as high as we expected this year, and they may be less than next year, then that number can be adjusted.
Right.
We won't know that probably till about – we don't reset that until the first of the year, so we'll come back in October and have that discussion with the council.
And to Councilmember Richens' question, I'm sorry, we did kind of spread it out. What had happened is 2 years ago we had a huge spike. Again, we didn't want to react to a one-time trend, so that resulted in this study that we did for 18 months that we reported on in October. So we've been using that fund balance in that responsible way to make sure we established what that new trend was and then came to you with that plan.
So in the meantime, we need to tell our employees eat vitamin C, get lots of
there
rest.
You go.
The less
yes.
the expense on the fund balance,
yeah.
the less
well,
the,
it really is. At the end of the day, it's our usage, utilization of the fund, and the impact that has on costs, and the healthcare laws changes where now we're covering dependents up to age 26 is also showing some signs of pressure on the fund. So we're trying to do everything we can, and we'll bring some ideas to council about maybe some plan changes that we can use to modify, because if we can drive this number down, we're also reducing the cost of the employees at the same time. So it has a double benefit.
Okay. Are there any other questions on the expenditure pressures? This is something we did do before. Okay. So putting those all together.
One question. On the mass transit, are those changes in estimates, or is that the impact of the elimination of LTAF?
What that was is during the 10-11 fiscal year, we balanced the budget by using some one-time savings in fixed route for mass transit. That was that delay of
the
new
delay
services.
Of the implementation
Correct.
Of all that.
We had two different lines that we delayed the
service. But once again, reminder that our legislature swept all of the funds from the state, and Arizona is one of only two states, I believe.
Correct. We no
in
longer
the country
have our
where the state has no funds, zero of transit.
Correct. We have no local transportation assistance
fund we're,
anymore.
Once again, 48 other states do that. Arizona does not do that.
And we do not. That is correct. Before
last year, they did that.
That's correct. We had assistance from the state on the mass transit. They actually funded that, a portion of that. And that is gone at this point. But within for the 10-11, we had that ability to use some one-time savings to delay some of the regional routes that were coming online in Mesa, and we're allowed to put that as a credit toward our cost of the lines in Mesa. That was a one-time savings, so that needs to be made up in 11-12. So what does that put us today? Combination with our decrease in revenues and our expenditure pressures puts us in a shortfall, a two-year general fund shortfall condition of $32.8 million. But there's a but to that, okay? So here's the better thing.
Councilmember Higgins?
No, back to that last slide, the budget shortfall
I'm
slide.
Sorry?
The $5.3 million, actually it's gone back five slides, but since the same number came up again, I'm asking the question. And you counted it like it was for 10-11 and 11-12?
That is correct.
It's so why don't we show in 11-12 the 5.3 plus whatever and it actually say it's 8.5 or whatever? Why are you? Oh, you are on this slide. So that 5.3 is a shortfall that isn't being made up anywhere. So it's
no,
this year's shortfall
ongoing,
and next year. It's
correct.
An ongoing shortfall.
Correct. It is an ongoing shortfall in our revenues.
Yeah, actually, the way it looks is it looks like you're double counting the 5.3.
It did.
But what you're actually saying is next year it's 9.1 that's
yes.
different.
That is correct.
Because you're carrying over the 5.3. You're starting at a lower base than
right.
what you... You have to make up what you didn't get in this year.
This year.
So really, it's not a 5.3 plus 5.3. It's a you're 5.3 short this year, and next year, to generate enough revenues to cover the needs, you'd have to generate 9.1 million.
Okay. Yep.
Because you're starting out 5.3 in the hole.
Oh, that's different from what I understood her just to say. But you're the accountant.
Well, I think you get to the same place.
It's not like. I was thinking it was 5.3, and then next year is 5.3 additional, so it is 10.6. But you're saying it's not. It's this leftover bit. We're just rolling over the deficit thing.
It's correct. What it is we set the budget at 10-11, our 10-11 resources to match our 10-11 services that we provide. So in fiscal year 10-11, we will have a revenue shortfall of $5.3 million. To continue those same services into 11-12, you're still going to have that revenue shortfall of 5.3. But not only will we have that revenue shortfall to cover our services, we will decline another 3.8. So in 11-12, we will have a revenue shortfall of 9.1 to cover our current level of services.
And all we're doing is we're comparing from where we stand today,
right.
or where we stand at the beginning of this year.
So our budget that we have today, and this is confusing.
Oh, good.
Our budget is, let's see if I can crack at it. Our budget that we have today is compartmentalized. It says, here's our budget. Let's say our budget this year is $100.
Right.
And next year our budget is also $100. Well, you're assuming that you're going to start at zero at the end of this year.
Right.
So the budget is based on projected revenues during that time period and what you have to raise to cover those. Well, instead of us hitting 100 and starting at zero this year, let's say we only hit 95. So we start 11-12 with a negative 5 instead of zero. So to meet that budget, which anticipated we were starting at zero, you really have to maintain the same level of services, you either have to adjust downward $5 million or you have to raise $5 million more in cash.
But on the slide, it looks like you do count it twice.
We are.
It does look like you count it twice.
What you do is you think about it, we look at it as a level of service. It costs us $100 to provide city services, okay? So we need $100 in revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we only end up with $90 at the end of the year, we're having to make those adjustments.
Well, I think the difference is that you have budgets, once again, that are individual periods, and on this one, you're rolling them together.
Yes, because
so it's almost out. You're taking apples and turning them into oranges, in a sense, in the deal, because you are counting it twice, because the budget is two separate units. And yet you're presenting an 18-month
right.
budget,
That's
which
right.
is a single unit.
Yeah.
Okay. So 2 years.
If you just look at it from an 18-month perspective,
so next year,
the number is the
The numbers should be the same, but the presentation is awkward because you're taking separate budgets and combining them. That makes sense at all?
It's a two-year budget. It's a two-year cycle perspective here. We're combining them all at one together.
So if you look at the fiscal year
10-11. I feel sorry for anyone who's listening at home because
I'm
sure they're completely confused.
Well, got it, though, because you explained it again. So that's
because we're looking out. We're starting here today in the middle of this fiscal year, actually almost the last, getting closer to the second, into the second half. But we're having to project where we're going to be for the next fiscal year, which is 18 months,
mm-hmm.
to the end of it. So we're compressing all this together.
Well, but once again, it gets back to the difference between separate individual one-year budgets, where you literally treat the world, the year is ending, then there's a gap, then you start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to give you two different...
Correct.
Two different numbers for analytical purposes.
Correct.
What you've done is you've eliminated that gap and you've lumped them together.
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
And that's why it looks like you're double counting.
Right.
You're really not double counting. You're just accounting
combining
for the,
two.
You're accounting for the impact of the rollover.
That's right.
Correct. So we're looking at it as a two-year budget, as a two-year shortfall, and a two-year solution to that shortfall. Putting those together. If you read just across the fiscal year 10-11 line, that would give you just the snapshot of fiscal year 10-11. And that would have your shortfall of $7.7 million. That's what
okay,
that
now you now from. Confuse us more by going to the next slide.
Okay. Because the next year is now our two-year, part of our two-year solution. Okay. This is why we looked at it as a two-year budget shortfall. So that we can look at it as a two-year solution as well.
And just say, here's the other problem we have, not problem, challenge, is that we're dealing with budgets and not
right.
actuals. Because budgets, see, and this is where it really plays out, is that your budget showed you expected to, shows that you expected to spend X number of dollars, and what we're saying is we only spent Y number of dollars, so we spent less money than
right.
what we had anticipated through our savings, and therefore... The actuals were less than the budget. So just as the actual revenues were less, the actual expenditures were less.
Correct. We need to look. What this is showing you here is the 9-10 savings that the departments did. At the end of 9-10, we had about $22.2 million in savings on the expenditure side above what we had anticipated.
And that was the result of one-time fixes, but also changes in operations.
Changes in operations, processes.
People had budgeted to this thing with 15 employees.
Absolutely.
They were able to change procedures and do the same level of service with only 12 employees or whatever they did across
Correct.
The board. There were savings that were generated that were not anticipated in the budget.
Correct. That was okay. citywide. We asked the departments to go back
right.
and just anywhere they can process improvements or efficiencies or even the one-time savings help us over through this time period. So, and they did a phenomenal job, the departments, on going back and just really looking at every little thing that they could get. And it accumulates over time, over the course of the whole city. Every little bit helps. So they were able to accomplish $22.2 million in savings above our anticipated. The other thing that we did that we spoke with you before was we actually took our financial policies to have between an 8 and 10% fund balance that we maintain, and we took that from that 10% down to the 8%. We've always gone to the 10% for budget purposes. And to bring that down to the 8%, that also gave us a one-time savings of $3.2 million. That gives us to the 25.4. So those savings are really the one-time savings from 9-10. Some of those may be an ongoing that we can continue to look at if they were process improvements, but we don't know what portion of that is going to be an ongoing item that we'll continue to look at. But really, it gives us a one-time source of funds to apply to the revenue shortfall that we're experiencing in 10-11 and anticipating to experience in 11-12. So when we apply that, that's why we look at a two-year window of a two-year budget shortfall and how do we apply this savings over that 2 years to see what we really need to address with an action item for 11-12 on how to address our budget. So that brings us down to a revised net two-year budget shortfall of the $7.4 million. So the $7.4 million represents in 11-12 current level of services that we do not have revenues currently identified for.
So, Mayor, one way to look at this is if we want to kind of look at it from a fiscal year standpoint, we're projecting at the end of this fiscal year, 10-11, that we will, if you combine the loss shortfall in revenues and the additional expenditures and health benefits cost, we would be, just if you just had budget, just only look at the budget, we'd be about $7.7 million short in the budget. The good news is we knew this. We had savings from the prior year of over $22 million. And so we knew going, and that was good news because during the year, we were seeing sales tax numbers were much worse, dropping off much faster than we would have liked, and it was potentially gonna give us a deeper
shortfall. But because of that savings in the prior year that carried over, we knew we had time to wait and see how the economy responded. The good news was, because we had that savings, we didn't have to make any changes mid-year like we've done in the years past, and we could wait until now. And the good news is we are starting to see a slight improvement. As we're saying, it's not as bad as we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So the good news is, at the end of this fiscal year, if you just took this fiscal year and not think about next year, we would actually end up with the $7-8 million and the $22-25 million in savings from the prior year, that's dollars that fell to the fund balance. We would be in a positive position overall for the end of this fiscal year. But again, so we're starting out at the end of, we're estimating at the end of this fiscal year that we're currently in. So on June 30th, we'll be about $17-18 million to the good. So that's a good news story for the city this current fiscal year. By June 30th, our estimate is the city will be about $17-18 million ahead of where we expected to be for available resources. So now, though, as we look for the next year, the one we're planning for in the budget that we're meeting on now, we've already projected again additional loss in revenues of $9 million and additional expenditure pressures of over 16. So that's $25 million. So now when you take the $17-18 million in additional available resources that we're going to end up with beginning this year, obviously all of that gets consumed by the shortfall in revenues and these additional expenditures for the coming year. But it still leaves us with a challenge. But $7 million, I'll put it in perspective, when this council came on board within weeks, almost seemed like months, we made a mid-year adjustment of over $60 million. Followed that by the next fiscal year, we made another adjustment of $21 million. Then we follow that up with last year's budget, 17, 19?
Last year was the 21.
$21 million adjustment. Now, it would seem that $7 million would be easy, but when you add all those together in that cumulative amount, which comes to over 100 and...
Over a five-year period, we cut $113 million in the general fund.
Personnel commodity services. So we've reduced the level of what we have to available to cut. So $7 million, while it's not nearly as much as in the past, and we're thankful for that, we do see it's still a challenge to find that. I think what you're going to hear, though, that the staff has really taken this as going forward, we're not going to be providing the same types of services and the same way we provided services 3 or 4 years ago. We recognize that. In many ways, it's forced us to change our ways and do things differently, which I think is sometimes important. But it's going to be a different organization. We're a different organization than we were before. But we will be presenting now over the next, and Kansas will talk about this, weeks of this month, our proposals to address that $7.4 million number. We believe that we can do it, and we believe we can do it without, and this is, I think, what's good news is, we'll be looking at some vacant positions in the organization, some restructuring, but we don't believe that we're going to have to do a reduction in workforce. We may have to make some reassignments of individuals in order to accomplish this. Beyond that, I think that's where we sit today, and I'll give credit, and I appreciate the council's support for the city staff. We responded early, we responded appropriately, and it puts us in position today where when things are just getting better, I think we right-sized to the right level. I think that's what it's telling us today. So that even when times are starting to kind of flatten out and get a little bit better, we're almost right at, we've kind of right-sized it to the point where $7 million, we can make those adjustments, and then as things get better, we can start looking at some improvements into the future. And I'm going to let Candace do a few more slides, and I'm going to come back to council and talk a little bit about some things we want to do maybe mid-year in this next budget. Candace, why don't you go ahead and just finish off our at-risk items.
Right, and I think we've covered some of them already,
yeah.
So we'll be able to go through these pretty fast. The other items that are still out there, we still have Highway User Revenue Fund diversion. It has been included in the governor's budget, so that's something that we're still monitoring. We have a risk on that one of up to about $4.3 million of possible diversion to other programs in the state rather than coming to the city of Mesa. The Highway User Revenue Fund is used solely by our transportation area for streets, street maintenance, street repairs, that type of thing. So the loss of that particular revenue would be the loss of being able to provide those services and doing those repairs in the streets program. Impact fees, I think we've already discussed quite at length, but out there is an outstanding risk. The other outstanding risk is just state shared revenues in general that we've discussed. If they, as Scott mentioned, as long as they're in session, we have the risk for changes in formulas. And that type of thing. So that's still outstanding. We'll continue to monitor that. The other thing on a federal level is our community development block grant is also as an outstanding area of at risk. We have some proposals out there this year that are proposing to actually reduce or eliminate the funding that we received in fiscal year 10-11. That's our current fiscal year. So those expenses we have already expensed. And then some proposals that possibly at risk for the 11-12 fiscal year. In our community development block grant, that actually pays for funds 23 positions within the city of Mesa, as well as the agencies that we move the money on to. But just within the city of Mesa, we have 23 positions that are funded through this particular block grant.
Councilman Richards.
What's the total fiscal impact there? What's the number associated with?
The number's about...
Assuming CDBG went completely away, what's the total?
Our CDBG number is about $5 million coming into...
But it's $3
million... $3.8 million on the...
year. $3.8 million from...
Right.
Plus...
And then you're adding some of the other home and ESD
yeah.
programs.
Some of the other programs are in there.
It's just on the city side, not the agency side. Yeah, I think we're about a million. Just the city of 23
oh,
positions.
Just the city
million...
side?
Million two,
yeah, for
million
just the
two,
city
million
side.
Three. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So we'll continue to look at that. The city is looking at some contingency plans, so our preliminary budget will include keeping this funding level with where we are for the fiscal year 10-11, but we'll have some contingency plans in case that funding falls away. Question? The other outstanding issues we have, again, are the health care costs that we've looked at. Or we've discussed earlier today. We will continue to monitor those. We're working with the benefit office. I know they are working strong on looking at any kind of cost containment that we can do, plan realignment, that type of thing. We'll be coming back to you over the next year. We'll have a presentation over the next month to kind of give you an update on where we stand in that fund, for that fund balance. And then over the summer, we'll be working on plan redesign and development and so forth and come back in the fall with the 2012 plan. Fuel prices, we're going to continue to monitor those. As we know, those are increasing. We will continue to monitor and address those to make sure that we have the appropriate funding to continue our current level of service into the next year. The city is also going to evaluate some future restoration of employee compensation. And I know Chris kind of wanted to talk to
just,
this point.
You know, Mayor and Council, as I mentioned, in the past, when things were, when sales tax was dropping, declining significantly, we didn't hesitate to come to council and talk about making adjustments during the year to address those declines. I'm not, and one of the reasons I asked Dr. McPheeters to kind of give us a kind of forecast where things are going in the future, but I would, what I would recommend to the council is that we would like to come back to council back coming in October, November to assess where we are as far as our revenue projections. Because it really is an important priority for us to address employee compensation. We've gone a significant amount of time without any increases. As a matter of fact, we've actually reduced compensation across the board for all employees. Mm-hmm. And so what we'd like to do is we don't see today, right now, in our forecast, that growth that would allow us to suggest that there's an ongoing revenue stream to adjust for that today. But we're trying to be as optimistic as possible, and we'd like to look and see if we can get some more months during the summer and early fall that we may see a trend, a little stronger trend than we're projecting. And if we did, we'd like to come back to council in a mid-year opportunity to look at that and maybe consider whether or not there was enough funding to restore back
pay that we've reduced from employees. So that's just something we want to put on the table to look at. Again, today we're not comfortable that we see that in the current numbers and the current forecast, but things may, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how things respond.
Just to get a sense of what's the number we're looking for.
Oh, thank you. So as you recall, back in 2009, January
2009,
is when we took the 2% across the board reduction for all employees, and to restore that would be about $4 million. $4 million, but it has to be something we see that's going to be a $4 million that we believe will recur over a long period of time. So that's where that is, and I know there will be some interest, and you'll hear from employee groups, of restoring merit pay. And the way merit pay works out, there's about, you know, that's eligible, and it's really step pay. It's eligible for employees who have not reached the top of their pay range. So we have, it's not quite half and half, but maybe a little more than, or a little less than 50% of the employees are at the top of their pay range, so they're not eligible for merit pay. And merit pay in the past, the steps have been 5% increases. So if the remaining half the employees were to receive the step pay, that's a 2.5% overall increase. So it's another $4+ million on an annual 4.3 something. I can't remember.
So around $4 million on an annualized basis.
The difficulty with that is just it's compounding. It's not, you get it 1 year, and then the next year you add another percentage on top on that and another percentage on top of that. When we look at it, there may be an idea that you can do it for 1 year, but you have to be comfortable that you have a sustainable revenue stream somewhere, it's sales tax, that's going to grow as the same rate that you're increasing pay, and that's what we're trying to watch and monitor to see when that comes back.
Well, and I think where it comes into, and I hate the term merit pay because it's really not, it's a program step pay. But we have a compensation system in certain departments, especially public safety, where the system is designed to act as what I would refer to as somewhat of a probationary period. In that you hire a new police officer, and it's anticipated that during the, and maybe it's not a partition, maybe it's almost like an apprenticeship period rather than a probationary.
It's skills development along
it's
the way.
It's a skills development, and those skills development are profound in the first 3 to 4 years of employment. You know, an officer right out of the academy learns very quickly, and our compensation structure and in most public safety is to recognize that. And so these step pays, or referred to as merit pays, kick in year 1, 2, 3 to get them up to a level that's commensurate with their skill level. And that's, you know, there's a reason behind that compensation plan. Well, obviously, we haven't been able to keep that because of the financial situation, which means that a certain group of employees, not a large one, has really taken a disproportionate brunt of this simply because they were stuck in a moment in time when the freeze actually froze them out of what would normally be the advancement. They've still served, they've still grown, they still have increased in those skills, which the normal compensation plan would recognize, but it hasn't. And so maybe what we need to do is, rather than do a blanket merit pay type of thing and a blanket this, is we might have to, and I know this adds to the complexity of it, we might have to look at certain groups or subgroups who may have been disproportionately negatively impacted as we go to a solution. And like I said, I know that opens all sorts of many cans of many worms. So I don't throw that out there as an easy solution, but I think it may be something that, especially in light of what Dr. McPheeter said today, where we don't really have a very bright light at the end of the horizon, it's just I throw it on the table because recognize that we don't have employees that are in equal positions. There are some employees that, but for bad timing, really have taken a disproportionate hit. And have been affected negatively in a disproportionate manner. I have no idea what the solution to that is. I haven't looked at it that carefully. I just know it exists. And I know that we might, and this is for all the employee groups and everything, we might have to look at ways to address this rather than just a blanket, we're going to restore this and restore that, because we just can't, we don't have the money to do that. We don't have the resources to do that. That's something I'd like to throw out there, and I don't know whether that's possible. From the numbers we have right now, it looks really, really troubling, and it doesn't look like the resources are there, but it's something we may have to look at that's a little bit unique. Councilman Richens.
I just had a quick follow-up with Chris. You had mentioned that if we were to do any of these things, we had to have a sustainable revenue source to cover them or a sustainable reduction in expense offsetting, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
You could reduce costs in a certain area.
Sure.
And then, okay. All right. Just want to be clear. Thanks.
Councilman Fender.
And just a general look at it, as you know, we've been through this a couple of years now. The thing I'm looking for in this learning process of this budget is you've asked all the departments to go through a 5% reduction exercise. Not necessarily that's where we're going to go, but you've had folks look at that, right, on the reduction side. Mm-hmm. And then on budget finance, we've had several presentations of increase in fees. Without going into detail, one that even had proposed a $1.8 million cost recovery increase. And so what I try to see is all these pieces of the puzzle. It looks like right now, barring anything further drastic from the state, is we have a $7 million deficit to overcome, because we have to have a budget, a balanced budget as we proceed. So what would help as we go down this road through these next months of presentations is to be able to understand, just to understand in a decision-making process, are we going to go with a 5% reduction again with all the pain that's suffering? Do we try to find the increases in different portions or different spots throughout? And it'll help to have some clarity and some, say, 2 months from now when we have a little bit more visibility as far as how the revenue streams are going, if we're starting to have a trend and not just some isolated months of increase. It'll be nice to know, because the pain and suffering and the concern with the employees is obviously very palpable, and we're trying to work through it. So it would be nice to have some clarity on the pieces of the puzzle, because if you're asking me to say, I want you to make a decision between having all the departments go through a 5% reduction, or I'd like you to feel the pressure from the business community to do a $1.8 million increase in fees, as a decision maker, I have to struggle through that and find out what's the best decision that I see to make for that. So in the past, it's been a little fluid, and it's hard to kind of capture because things change as we go through these months. And I don't know how to best help that, but I know Councilman Glover's new at this, and sometimes it's not real easily seen. So at the end of it, you suddenly go, wow, we were able to fix this all of a sudden. It feels like, I know it isn't all of a sudden, but is it getting across okay?
Yeah, it's called the magic of budgets. But no, it's what we will do is we will present, and you'll see the schedule, we'll have all the departments come through that are being impacted by budget reductions. You're right, as you recall, at the council meeting we had in February, I indicated to the council I was asking for departments to give us a 5% options or reductions options. I will tell you that there are many departments that are not going to see, we're not going to recommend any reductions in. And I don't think there is a single department that we got to 5% on.
No.
So there, because at that point in time, we were looking at a number closer to 16.
At that point, we were looking at a $16.5
million. $5
million
when we started off. So we've really been able to, I think when you see the adjustments that are being made by the departments, there are still some significant ones. But again, it doesn't impact existing employees or new reductions in workforce. Everything we're proposing to close the $7.4 million shortfall doesn't assume any, I shouldn't say that. There's some minor fee increases that the council has already approved in the Parks Department, just very small. But
right.
Beyond that,
does not rely on
we fees. Don't rely upon any of the additional fees. Now, this is the general fund. So what you're hearing from departments are issues. For example, you'll hear things discussion about the environmental fee. Well, the environmental fee, because of the impact by the state on the HERF fund, is significantly impacting this transportation budget, and as effect, it's making it difficult for them to provide for a lot of programs that are otherwise And we'll talk about how we would fund those. And you have, as you mentioned, there's a fee being proposed to recover some costs for our tax and license system, which
in other words, this is the result of just because they cut a budget at the state level doesn't mean the need goes away. There are certain things we have to do, and the state may have swept the fund that generally helped pay for that as if these problems only exist at the city level. The state has no has absolutely no involvement in some of these problems, nor does Congress. But, you know, darn it, if they cut it, it just goes away, No, it doesn't. Somehow, environmental, for example, we're under legal mandates to do certain things and to provide certain levels of service, which the burden of which was shared among the different various levels of government in the past. We've gotten state monies to do that. We've even gotten federal monies to do that because it's a combined problem. We provided the service. We took care of it. State and federal assisted in the cost of that. What we're finding is that a lot of the time, a lot of those programs, they have removed their contribution and they've washed their hands of the financial impact of these requirements. But the requirements still stay on the books. We still have certain environmental issues. We still have other issues that we have to continue to provide that service. It's just that the federal and the state governments have removed themselves from the financial participation and acted as though now it's completely on our backs. One of the ways, only ways that we can continue to fulfill that mandate is perhaps to adjust a fee that relates specifically to that mandate. That's reality. That's just the way that that's that welcome home. And I think our citizens need to will understand that as they get hit with these fees. These are not fees we desire to increase. These are not fees that go in to fund some other program. Many times these are fees that are directly related to a mandate for which we used to have assistance from above and now it's no longer there. That cost has got to be borne. It's got to be paid. And the legislature, the member of Congress that pats themselves on the back and says, I have never raised this or that. Well, yeah, you have. You have with the pass down. You have with the dump down. And the citizens will still bear the cost of that. That's just, we're faced with many of those situations. And that's just the reality. That's where we are. And that's how it's going to be. And I don't like that. I know our citizens don't like that, but that's the way it is.
Just to follow up then. So that that $7 million figure, does that take into account the exercise that the departments have gone through? So, or will that be in a... So you're saying that, hey, I asked everybody to go through this.
What I do, what I've done, Councilman Finner, is I asked them to come, when they came and met with my me and the staff, as I said, because I know better than asking just for one option for what's available. Right. Essentially, the 5% knew that I had more than one option. We had more than one option to talk about, and it really helped us understand kind of the impacts that each of the various options might take to get to the 5%. And then we looked and considered the council strategic initiatives and where that placed it. And as a result, and because of a slight improvement we've seen how in the revenues, is we didn't come close to taking 5% from any one of the departments.
So, Chris, the presentations that are going to come from the departments, there's two ways to handle this. Number one, and what we've done in the past, is the departments show up and they say, here's our 5% plan. And I'm let's assume that that was there. And then we present all those 5% plans each individually, but then we look at those and say, okay, here's how those are. But then when we come back, we say, well, we can get by without this and we can do that. And we sort of mold those and mesh those into an overall budget.
Right.
That's one way to do it. And then and then you have reports every time some department comes further, you know, this is devastation. And the fact is that them, that those 5% cuts may never take place.
Right.
What I'm hearing from you is that what you've done is you've already gone through that process. And what the departments are going to present here is their plan that started with a 5% plan, but really is their share, their specific piece of what is an overall plan that gets us to the $7 million.
That's correct.
I'm hearing right, right?
And the best way to look at it is we didn't look at this. I mean, we started out in their proposals as give us 5%, but we did not address the 7.4 by doing like an across-the-board equal distribution. We actually had to go and look at each department and make a presentation and balance it out with what, you know, we've heard from council and what was available, maybe through vacant positions, contracts that were expiring, like you'll hear from the police department, Our red light camera contract, our leasing of all the equipment, we've finished a last lease on that. So the dollars that were in their budget for that are freed up. So things like that come about as we go through those discussions. So we'll present to council that what I've asked the departments to present to council is very similar to what you saw last year, is they will cover a little bit of their history of where they've come from over the last 3 or 4 years. But they'll also highlight, here are the reductions that, you know, essentially the city manager, we've said, okay, if you all can contribute this much, and we've looked at the whole list, and we'll give you the summary at the end, you'll see how we're addressing the 7.4. I want to be careful to presume, I don't want to presume too much, because we may bring a proposal to you as we did last year in a couple of departments, and the council said, oh, not really comfortable with that. Can you bring us back another option? Can you tweak this, modify that? So that's what we would like to do, is bring the proposals to you. If you're somewhat uncomfortable and like to look for other options, then we'll come back and get that feedback and adjust. But if today, if all the departments could stand here today and present everything, they know, and we have a list, again, except for I think some of the parks fees that the council has already approved, we will be able to balance the 7.4 today with no reductions in workforce and no presumption of additional fees, whether it's the environmental fee or the tax and
TPP.
Now, there are other justifications we'd like to present for those, but otherwise, I think you'll hear the 7.4. We'll be able to accomplish that with vacant positions, reductions in some commodities, and adjustments of some services.
And sorry, Mayor, just a reflective listening here. So you're saying that you'll be able to come in with a plan from all the different departments that will address this deficit?
Absolutely.
Okay. When taken together.
Yes. And what we'll do is let us go through and make the presentations, and because I want to hear from council if there's some that you're not real comfortable with. I don't want to presume that, but we schedule for the 28th of April that we'll then, assuming everything,
bring it all together.
We'll have it all together. We'll have the list. If there's some issues that we need to follow up with, then we'll leave those blank. But we have a plan today that we believe addresses the 7.4 right now. The departments are working on those presentations to bring to council, just to give the background and understanding of each one of those.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Makes sense? All righty. Yeah. And here's the schedule.
And on that note, there's the schedule. So we have scheduled each study session through the month of April. Those are your Thursday study sessions as well as your Monday study sessions. At each study session, you will hear from at least 2 to 3 departments on their budgets. And as Mr. Brady said, they'll be covering what their budget looks like, what their budget reductions are, if any. Some of these departments that are coming forward to you do not have any budget reductions through this cycle. And then we will sum up for you on Thursday, April 28th at your study session where we stand against our $7.4 million shortfall.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Just looking at this list, this is not every department in the city.
No.
So are the departments that aren't coming forward, are we not looking at budget
if reductions? Council would like to have other departments, we are trying, recognizing there's a lot of different schedules that council has during this month, apparently, that we're trying to work around.
Yeah.
And these are the departments that are most impacted by addressing the 7.4. If there are other areas that council would like to address, we can add them on. These departments are the ones you want to hear because they are the ones that are,
I mean, yeah, public safety we need to hear.
They cover the majority. But if there's others along the way that we want a presentation from, we'll be glad to do. But I think you need to at least hear from these at a minimum in order to understand the changes. The other departments that were not, they're remaining as they are today. We're trying to bring to council, I think in almost every case here, departments that are being affected in some way in addressing the 7.4.
We do. We have a few departments that are not on the list that do have some reductions, okay. But the reductions are actually savings. So it's not a policy decision on whether you want to continue a service or not. It's just that they had savings that they identified within their budget.
Contracts that expired. But we could probably give a little. We could give a list of those.
Yeah, we'll still do a list in our summary, or if earlier, if you'd like it before the summary on the 28th, I can give you a list of those that are not scheduled to come before you and what those particular reductions are. So if
that's what I would prefer, is to take a look at the summary of reductions from other departments.
Fair
and
enough.
If I have any questions, we can
then we could follow
bring
that.
It forward.
Okay.
Then we can bring it forward.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, we go ahead and do that.
Okay. Yeah, and as Chris said, there's, I don't know that there's a week that goes by that some of us aren't somewhere.
I'm out of town twice next month.
Well, I'm out of town once, and Dennis told me that one time he's going to miss. So we'll just, you know, it is what it is.
We might want to use the subcommittee process, too, if we have to.
Well, and the great thing about having the iPads is that no matter where you are, you can.
The schedule beyond this is we have to have by charter a proposed budget to you the 1st of May.
Yeah, and remember that you can also use this to pick up streaming. You can't do it?
You got to download
that. Okay, because you have a firewall probably set up. Some of us do. Okay, we'll figure it out. All righty.
Okay.
Any more questions for Candace?
Okay, so we'll see you. We'll start on Monday.
Monday we start it off.
We will.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's take it's 9:23 right now. Let's take a 7-minute break. We have one more item before we go into before we go into executive session.
We haven't taken a vote on that.
But I would like to. I know, but I'd like to give Chuck some time, or whoever Candace is going to give us next. So let's get back at 9:30. Okay, I think we're back. Thank you,
physically anyway,
Mr. Odom. Well, right now we're going to hear a presentation to discuss the secondary property tax levy.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Good news is 5 slides and no quadruple negative, so technical difficulties way down.
You're
going
to help us
down.
Take our Chevy to the levees.
The levy was gone.
And the levees will be done in 5 slides or less.
So this is our annual discussion about the secondary property tax levy. First of all, just as a reminder, secondary property tax can only be used for debt service, can't be used for anything, any other purposes. It is driven by what happens to our secondary assessed valuation. So the first slide is...
Well, actually, it's driven primarily by what we need to pay the debt.
Pay the debt.
Yeah. But the other things are sort of just not sidebars, but they're the X factor. But the main thing is, what do we need to pay the debt?
Correct. I'm going to come to that resultant, okay. Right. So in 9-10 was our first year to assess a secondary property tax. We were about $4.7 billion in secondary assessed valuation. 10-11, when we first had this discussion, we were down to about $4.1 billion. And the numbers we just got in late February, for 11-12, we're down to $3.2 billion in secondary assessed valuation. That's a 22.7% drop. So that obviously is going to have an effect on what we're doing on our current levy. Last spring, we presented this $181,000 average home price. We set a rate of 0.3454 to achieve a levy of $6,252 on the average home. So if I apply that 22.7% drop to that levy amount, the average home now is $139,913. That requires a 0.4469 levy rate to achieve the same levy amount. So the average impact on a home is negative zero. So the negative zero. I started reading my own chart. So it is zero.
There is no impact.
Yes.
So, when are you retiring?
Yes, I am. Eventually. Maybe sooner than I want.
No, if we have to muddle through this, you're going along for the ride, bud. We're not going to let you off that easy.
So that adjusts for no impact to the rate. Just as some comparisons.
No impact to the rate. No impact to the levy.
To the levy, I'm sorry. Yes, you're
correct. We're concentrating on levy, the reason being?
That is the amount that we raise to pay that debt at the same
time. And that debt amount is?
$14,141,000.
And that debt amount is fixed.
That is fixed.
And therefore, our purpose in the secondary property tax is to raise $14 million.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to do. And that doesn't change.
That's correct.
Well, it changes, but it changes based on the debt schedule, not by any decisions we make on an annual basis.
That is correct.
Okay. So therefore, we need to collect the same amount from the citizens of Mesa every year based on what they approved in the bond package based on the debt service amount.
That is correct.
Okay. Which is why levy is so important.
That is correct.
All right.
So we put in the comparison on the primary and secondary rates to our comparable cities and here in the Valley. And the reason we do that is some cities adjust their primary against their secondary rates to maintain that. So we did that as the apples to apples comparison. And as you can see, from a secondary standpoint, or a total overall standpoint, we're well below the average here in the valley by well over half. We also then do a comparison of GO debt per resident based on the new population numbers, outstanding GO bond debt at the end of 9/10, and I use the Department of Revenue for that so we'd have comparable numbers, to give you a bond debt per resident, which we're significantly below all the comparable cities, and also present what the percent of GO debt limit used or utilized is currently outstanding. And we're well below all those measures. So if we have any questions.
Vice Mayor.
Yeah, on slide five, I'd just like to point out a couple things. If there were ever a slide that demonstrates why we want to build a better Mesa and why the mayor has said that we need to raise the bar and invest in our community, this slide is it. If you look at just Mesa and Scottsdale, the population of Scottsdale is roughly half that of Mesa.
It's actually less than half.
Less than half. The outstanding bond debt is twice in Scottsdale what it is in Mesa. More than twice. And yet the percentage of the GO debt is comparable, 22 to 26%. It's because the valuation of that community is twice that of what it is in Mesa right now. So bringing in these high-wage jobs, looking at how we do our strategic planning and economic development planning are absolutely essential for raising the quality of life in Mesa. And you get high quality, you get more better government, high quality government, more stuff for less money. That's it. I'm off my soapbox now.
It's okay. Thank you. Does the Glendale include the Coyote debt or not? I'm not going to go there.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay.
You're going to get yelled at.
Come on.
And so what we'll do is that we'll come back for official action in your second meeting in July. So this is the discussion, talking about what pressure is on the levy and the levy rate. And we'll take, after you've adopted the legal budget, we have to do it 14 days after that adoption for the levy.
Okay. And I'm assuming these comparative tax rates on the secondary, since every other city is still faced with the same drop in valuation that we are, since property valuations went down across the valley. I don't know of any place where they actually went up.
This is the rate from
2009.
Yeah, last year, Mayor. So they would be actuals. We don't know what everybody else is doing.
No, I know these are actuals. What I mean, though, is as we go through this budget term or cycle, the other communities are faced with the same
pressure. Oh, right,
we are,
yes.
With
absolutely.
A fixed debt amount and
yep.
a reduction in
absolutely.
In assessed valuations.
Yep.
So they're going to have to make these kind of kind of deals,
right.
too. But once again, I think this council stated very carefully that we want our citizens to know what check they're going to cut every year. That's the most important thing. The levy amount, and in this case, the demonstration of 6252, that's what we shoot for, is that people's tax bill does not change. And the rate is simply a factor that goes into it. We're focusing on what is the check that our citizens are gonna cut, and that we're hoping doesn't change.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Odom? Great.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you. Okay, next item is to acknowledge receipt of minutes and various boards and committees. Have a motion from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Higgins. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor. Just a reminder, this Saturday, Falcon Field will be having their annual open house from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Their parking is free. Admission is free. And I believe we have the ceremony out at near the old pool. What was it? No, it's the
Falcon Field Park.
Falcon Field Park at 10?
11
a.m. So we invite everybody to be there at Falcon Field Airport this Saturday, April 2nd.
Can
so.
I add something to that?
Please.
And stop by to see our City of Mesa booth.
Yeah.
We have a raffle. We have a lot little iPads with fun flight simulators. And if you're there slightly early, I'm actually going to fly in a vintage airplane in a little
formation flying exhibition.
Really?
See, you can tell I'm nervous, and I haven't even gotten there yet.
Oh, that's going to be fun. And when is that you're going to do?
We're taking off at 10.
Yeah.
9:45.
And you're skydiving into the park at 11?
My father said never to skydive or never jump out of a perfectly good airplane. So I've always listened to
My father was a paratrooper, and he never jumped out of an airplane.
Yeah, he's a smart guy.
He was pushed every time.
Anyway, so come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of cool things.
Very good. And then, Mayor, just a reminder that the Tour de Mesa cycling event is also this Saturday from 6 a.m. to noon.
We have a busy morning. Tour de Mesa at 6 a.m., and then we have the annual torch ride that leaves Chester's at 10 o'clock, I believe. That's why I'm going to miss your over 2,000 cycles. It's quite a sight. If you want to watch just an unbelievable amount of cycles, they leave Chester's there on Country Club and just south of 8th Avenue and head north on Country Club to the B-line. And they go out in groups of 500s. If they didn't, the roads would be shut down for like a half an hour. But it's quite the sight to see groups of 500 cycles go out. And it's for a great cause. Mesa really is the center of the Special Olympics. We have had it the last few years, most of the competition in Mesa. The main event is at Mesa Community College. And the main fundraiser, which is this torch ride, is to raise money for Special Olympics. And it's what caps off Bike Week also, is this Saturday. So it's a great cause, a great event. A lot of police departments, police officers, this is their primary charity, so they're very much involved. And then Chester's, who is just I can't say enough good things about Chester's Harley-Davidson. They are involved in our community in ways that people really don't even know. They do a great job of involving people in the community, and they're just a great member of the Mesa community. So thanks to them for staging this, sponsoring it. And we work very closely with them, our PD and city departments. You can imagine what it's like to put 2,000 bikers in one place. You're dealing with traffic issues, street closures, all sorts of things. So kudos to our city departments and especially our PD for working with them. Okay. You can finish up.
That's it.
Do we have anything that people want to report on? Councilmember Kavanaugh. I skipped over the meetings and events.
Real briefly, last night I attended an event at the Mesa Arts Center. We had Mesa Public Schools with musical groups, orchestras from all the high schools in Mesa were in performance at the MAC last night. And this was due to a sponsorship by the Mesa Arts Center Foundation and Milano's, which was very generous. That allowed it to be a free event, and it was a great venue with groups performing outside and inside. I want to thank Frank Bennett of the Mesa Arts Center Foundation, who has been the prime mover behind this event, and it's a great way to showcase the great quality of our school system as well as the great attributes of the MAC. Thanks.
And the two Franks, Frank Milano over at Milano's also. So thanks to them. Vice Mayor?
Well, since the weather report for tomorrow is 97 degrees, and I'm still hoping that this is an April Fool's joke, everybody should be excited to hear that we opened our first pool in 11 years over at the Skyline High School. It was a great partnership between the City of Mesa and the Mesa Public School District. So if you have the opportunity, go over there. Fantastic facility. Takes advantage of the views from East Mesa. It kind of frames the mountains off in the background. It will be used for competition, so it will generate a little bit of revenue to help offset some of the costs. Also, Mayor, I attended the MAG meeting for you yesterday. Very interesting discussion of sounds like MAG will make an application for some of the money that was turned down by Florida for rail study, mm-hmm. and are going to be looking at asking for financing for rail study to look at commuter rail or high-speed rail out of Tucson and in the East Valley. So I'm looking forward to for that study moving Good. Forward.
Great. Okay. That's it. All right. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak in public?
No requests, ma'am.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to enter an executive session. I have one from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are now moving into executive session. Thank you.